welcome to another episode of Be Real Behind the Grind. My name is Bessie D. Smith. Thank you so much for joining me here today. As you can tell, I am super stoked for this episode. I've kind of been dreaming, scheming, planning for this day for almost a year now, ever since I released my conversation with Andrew Barrett Cox in the first season. If you listen to that, then you are going to be in a perfect mind space for today's episode. If you haven't listened to that episode, that's okay. Just want to give you a heads up though, these episodes pair really well together. So if you want to have a little binge sesh for yourself, go ahead and listen to that one, listen to this one, back to back. Would highly recommend. I'm not going to say much about these people. If you haven't guessed who they are already, I'm a little biased when it comes to their awesomeness. I'm a little obsessed. I will say this. I'm not going to say much, but I will say this. In communicating with the universe, if you are an artist like myself who has set the intention to meet and collaborate with like-minded or different profound, bar-raising, trend-pulsing, barrier-pushing artists, it is both my hope and my strong witchy intuition that you will have the pleasure of meeting and collaborating with a collective such as the Neon Coven. You may have heard of the Neon Coven from my episode with Andrew, or from several of the projects that they have done around New York in the past year. Or you may have heard of them because of their current show, which is now playing open-ended in Bushwick, Oscar at the Crown. And today I get to talk with the other two co-founders of the Neon Coven, Mark Mariello and Shira Milikowski. If you like what you hear, follow the Neon Coven on Instagram. Stay in the know about their upcoming shows. Like I said, Oscar at the Crown is still running open-ended. You can get tickets on Today Tix or on their website at oscarathecrown.com. Also, check out their Instagram and Facebook for their upcoming Pokemon show, which Andrew wrote. What the fuck was that? Which Andrew wrote when he was in the seventh grade. Crazy times, y'all. Anyway, without further ado, here is my conversation with Shira and Mark.
What was my favorite moment? Oh, when Bethany just goes, and that's what makes you a good friend. Which, like, out of context is a nice thing to say, but in this context is like, that's why you're supporting cast.
Oh, I didn't pick up. Like,
that's why you're a
that.
Friend of the house. Because he's the house size and he's the friend of the house. I'm just like, that's why you're a good friend.
I did not pick up on that.
Capital F.
My favorite part was, you can all say I'm not a good singer, but I was just cast in Chicago on Broadway. Silence. Like, where any other group of people would say, oh my god, congratulations. The other housewives went like this.
And then she says it again, and someone was like,
You said it. Congratulations. You've said it three times. Dorinda, she was like, congratulations. I was like, no one's noticing the weird thing about this moment. So I just, they got cast in a show on Broadway and no one has responded.
Did you see, though, I think it was last night or recently, Chicago released a statement that was like, Luanda Lesseps has not been confirmed to join the cast on Broadway.
What?
Like, they were like, it was like, they were like, it doesn't mean she'll not be a part of the family at some point, but like, she is not, like.
Wait, she's not in Chicago?
They released a statement that was like, she has not been confirmed to be joining the cast on Broadway. Or like, not yet been confirmed to be joining the cast on Broadway. Like, the statement was like, essentially, was like, we're not saying she won't be at some point, but.
But wait.
They're not like, they weren't like.
Who released the item that she was? Was it in Page Six?
I don't know.
We heard about it a few days ago,
I think it was like, because people knew because she was going to say it on the.
Yeah.
So it was probably a rumor mill thing. But like, now that I think about it, like, it was on Broadway World and stuff, but I don't think it was like a. statement from the Weislers. I think she's not.
Oh my god! Can you imagine going on TV and saying you've been cast in a Broadway show that you have not been cast in?
You know, it's so funny because I actually did consider posting something on Instagram about being cast in Tina, but then I was like, that's not cool. Like, that's not cool. And then that thought ends. Like, that's when you end the thought and you move on to something else.
One time, one of my favorite pranks that I've ever done was years ago. So during Donkey Show, I like made a Facebook status that was like, at Andrew Barrett Cox. I was like, I love you so much. Congratulations. Like, you're going to love that tour life. I'm going to miss you, but I'm so proud of you and so excited for like this next year of your life. It's going to be incredible. And then he got like all these tags. And then I think just a few weeks ago, I do this to him all the time. I made something that was like, Emmy nominee Andrew Barrett Cox, sounds pretty fucking good, doesn't it? And then like people were calling him. I was over his place that night and like he was on the phone with his dad and his dad thought it was funny, but I guess his mom was like, you can't do this. His mom was really annoyed about it. I was like, tell her I said sorry. I love to lie on the internet.
I would like to say that for an episode about manifestations,
yeah,
we're starting with what I would say is not manifestation advice.
Also, what a line. I love lying on the internet.
I do. Because like, whatever.
As far as I'm concerned, you can do anything on the internet as long as you don't say the following. I've been waiting on this news, and now I finally get to announce it.
Now that the ink is finally dry, I'm so happy to announce I've been keeping it under wraps for so long.
Can we take that out of the lexicon?
Can we cancel it?
Yes.
Can we cancel those?
Just that, announce your good
that
news.
And big news tomorrow.
Oh yeah, big it's news. It's sister. It's nastier older sister. Yeah. Big news tomorrow.
What? Just tell me today.
Just tell me today.
What's going to happen between today and tomorrow?
I'm not checking your account tomorrow.
No, I'm not coming back.
Setting an alarm. What time? What time does the press release go out?
I think that's a good start to the episode, actually, though.
I do, too.
That was pretty good.
Joke manifestation.
Yeah, joke manifestation. Oh, my gosh. Thank you all so much for coming onto the show. I'm thrilled. Because now we're here discussing, like, the Neon Coven from Little Spawn to, like, where it is today to the future. And it's just cool. It's just seeing, like, this is a manifestation in itself. So I'm happy to have you here.
I'm so happy to be here. In the ears of people who are listening. Eventually.
Of the fans.
Of the fans.
Of the fans of my fan base. Let's just get right into it, because we're going to... I anticipate tangents, and so...
Yeah.
It's
why?
Best to just, why? Would, yeah. Why? Why on yeah. earth? Yeah, you know? So let's just get into it. Let's start with the beginning. How did you two meet? I don't think I know this story.
So the straight up, I'm going to say boring version was Mark was an undergraduate at Harvard. I was working at the ART and I was teaching there and I was directing a show and I needed some undergraduates to be in the show. And Remo, who was a teacher and an actor in Boston and at Harvard, was like, this is the student you need to put in your show. And I knew who Mark was because he was like the star freshman who'd been in all the star things.
Wow.
And has like this shock of blonde hair. So you just kind of knew who this person was. And I was like, great.
It was my sophomore year. It was like the fall of my sophomore year of school. And then we became close. We formed a secret club.
Oh yeah, we formed a play reading club.
We formed a secret play reading club that mostly just became like a secret like get together and we can and eat junk food and like complain club. But
I
then
figured.
Also be like, we would all show up and be like, did you read the play? Not gonna say
right. Someone
did. Sometimes
yeah.
Someone did.
I forgot about Cake Friday.
It was fun. And so like through that I think is where we really kind of became friends. And then Shira directed me in a show the fall of my senior year, so 2 years after the first one.
Which is that the one on your website?
So we did this version of this play called Little Murders.
Yes.
And then that, we then 2 or so years later did it again in Brooklyn. And that was kind of when we were like, maybe we should do more of these things together.
Love that. What was it about your individual work ethics and professional, like, artistic characteristics that made it seem like this was going to work out?
Oh, I love how you phrased that question. I'd say this, and this is an important, for me, frame and how I think about the narrative of the company. It hasn't been, for better or worse, but so far for better, it hasn't been like, oh, now this is a thing, and we know what this thing yields. Oh, look, it's yielding that thing. Now we have another thing.
Right.
It really has been, I don't want to say it's chaos, because things are planned out and followed through. Like, obviously, our first show is running. Like, we made shit happen. But the journey for me, at least, was like, Mark moved back to New York from Berlin and was like, let's redo Little Murders. Let's redo Little Murders. And I remember I was like in Israel with my family, and I was like, he will not stop texting me. And then I got back and I was like, I'm glad he's persistent, because I want to do that.
Yeah.
And then the like wacky story of Andrew ended up as a part in Little Murders randomly because someone else dropped out, and he had just moved to New York the day before. And Mark was like, Andrew's in New York. And I Googled Andrew, and I saw a video of him kicking his leg over his head. And I was like, sure, he can play this part. It's not a dancing part. It's not a musical. I just was like, he's funny. He came. He performed in his show. We had a great time. He wasn't necessarily, like, a consistent actor. But I knew that whatever he did do, would like, everyone else would deal with it.
Yeah.
And then at the end, I'm sure you've heard this story, but at the end of that process, he came to me and he was like, I'm not an actor. I'm a composer. I've written 5 musicals. Do you want to hear any of them? And I was like, sure? Who says that to you? Like, that's bonkers. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly I called Mark and was like, wait, I love Andrew's music. And Mark was like, yep, I've been telling you that for 5 years. And so then suddenly it was like, let's do Rocky Horror. And then so things kind of led to one another. There definitely was one night at a bar where we were like, maybe this is a company. And Andrew said, I've always wanted to call something the Neon Coven. And we were all like, we love that. He's like, I already registered the domain. You know, so it is a little like, I wish I could say, oh, we made a 5-year plan and it really fit in with my other projects because ABC, it hasn't been that. It's been organic.
Yeah. Some of the best things are.
Yeah. I mean, I'm surprised because I spent 10, 15 years not making a company. Like, when I got out of grad school, everybody was like, now you form a company.
Ah, those are the steps?
Those were the steps, yeah. It's like, get with your friends, get a nonprofit, ask your old theater professor to be the head of your board, register as a 501c3, do a fundraiser where your friends come and you don't make any money, but you think you're going to, apply for grants, get better at writing grants. Start getting grants. And I didn't feel like I had that in me. I don't know. It just didn't feel like my path. And so I spent all these years just not having a company. And then suddenly we were sitting in the deep end. And
which is the name of the bar. But also, we're sitting in the deep end.
And Andrew was like, how about calling it the Neon Coven? And even then I was like, well, I'm not really starting a company. And actually, I am rambling a little bit, but one turning point for me, weirdly, was a year ago when we decided to throw our launch party slash concert, and we didn't know Oscar was happening. We knew Oscar was one of the things we wanted to one day do. I sent a mass email to all my friends that was like, hey, I started a theater company, we're doing this party concert, and there was something else in that email that I was announcing. I was announcing 2 or 3 things at once.
I don't remember.
Yeah. And I was like, I'm doing this other show at this other place, whatever it was. And all these people, like my old college friends and my family and my cousins, they all wrote back and were like, cool, you started a theater company. And I was like, well, wait, now you're interested? Like, it somehow that it gave it a frame that people could understand. And then I started to think like, oh, there's a reason why people do this. It just wasn't right for me for so long.
Yeah.
And now suddenly it is because it happened in that organic way.
A frame for people to understand. I like that. I like that. Because, I mean, you're right. Well, and I didn't know the steps to... You went to school for... Master's was for directing.
Directing.
Yes. And so I didn't know that those were the steps to afterwards form a theater company, da-da-da-da-da. Some might think that there's that period of, like, waiting or, like, in limbo where you're not... really doing anything, you're not really working towards anything, but you were working, you were directing, like you were doing different projects.
Yeah, I assisted for dance for many years, and then I was on the staff at the ART for 6.
Right, so you were doing all of that, it just wasn't clicking, or it just wasn't...
It was great.
Yeah.
It was great, but just, I wasn't ready, I wasn't going to start a company. Like, I was doing my own thing.
You were exploring the world and your own experiences, you just weren't ready to settle down yet.
I'm like, always... verging on the marriage analogy and then always backing away from it.
I love it.
But there is a sense for me, certainly, of of so much less loneliness now that I have these partners.
Yes.
I mean, that is such a difference.
Yeah.
And I don't think that it's like, oh, I should have done it earlier. I think I like waited for the right partners.
For sure. For sure. Mark, tell me about your experience through that process.
I mean, it's funny because I was thinking, you kind of asked earlier, like, what made this, even just between Shira and I, kind of click.
Yeah.
And I always have thought, like, oh, thank God I met you as, like, an actor in a show you were directing. Even though, like, at the time, like, you were a professor and I was an undergrad. Like, I think because we met in that context, we, like, established a relationship. We didn't get, like, super close over the course of that show. We did. But, like, we established this relationship as peers.
Mm.
And then I think even later when I went on to take a class, my professor and I was your student, which I had to then be like, okay.
Right.
We're not friends. A class, we're not friends. We are, but, you know, it's a different relationship. I think, like, because of that, it opened up all these doors for us to connect with one another, and has, like, allowed, I think, our relationship between the two of us to, like, flourish in this really remarkable way where, like, absolutely you are my mentor, but also my friend and my peer,
mm-hmm.
which is, like, those are the best mentors to have.
Yeah.
And
co-collaborator.
And co-collaborator, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which, of course, you learn a lot from one another. And so I think now, when I think about this journey to starting this company together and working together, you know, for me, it's come out of this drive of just, like, wanting to make my own thing. Like, wanting to do our own thing, wanting to make my own opportunities. Like, yeah, I audition and get cast in things, and I love to do that. But I'm not going to wait around for someone else to hand something to me or for me to earn something from someone else when I can build it.
Yes.
On my own. I think so that, too, was, like, when I was moving back, moving to New York and texting Shira all the time while she was on vacation saying, can we do that show again? Can we do that show again? It was out of this impulse to be, like, I love that. Let's just do it again. Let's make for ourselves. I'm not going to show up to New York and wait for someone to hand something to me. And so it's for me, it's been a lot about this opportunity and ability to make things for myself. Let's not wait around for someone to option Andrew's show that he's written. Let's just do it ourselves. And we can do it small and scrappy and then let it grow from there.
Yeah.
And I think an important part of what we're just barely starting to settle into a rhythm as a company, not even, like, we're hinging on beginning to settle into a rhythm. And what I think is something that I really value about the way the process that we've fallen into is, like, start small and start scrappy.
Hmm.
Like, we can do things like over bottles of wine in someone's apartment and living room.
Mm-hmm.
And then it graduates to, like, back of a dive bar.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe it graduates to a nicer studio. And then it goes back to the dive bar. But I think, too, you know, when I, in discussions I've had with other folks who are creating their own stuff, like, my first thing that I always say is, I was like, find a bar that's going to let you bring 100 people in there for free on a Tuesday night.
Mm.
Just do it. The sound's going to be a pain. It's not going to be great, but, like, people are going to have fun. And it's not, come to my reading at this studio. Which is also great.
Also great.
For certain things.
Yes.
And so,
I like that. I like what you said. Especially because the differences between creating your own shit, making your own shit happen, and hopping onto somebody else's shit. When you hop onto somebody else's shit that they're making, you miss a lot of those beginning steps. You don't see that. And so, as an artist, first of all, deciding what kind of artist you want to be. If you're somebody who just wants to replicate or come into a project that's already on its feet and things like that, which is totally fine. You know, lots of people are needed for that. Compared to starting your own shit from the ground up and seeing the little cogs and the mistakes along the way, you see all of the lows, which make, I think, all of the highs more worth it, but you also see all of the shit happening, all of the stress points, all of the mistakes and the failures, or, like, the things that just didn't click and things like that. And so I feel like there's a different energy that comes from people who create their own shit from the ground up. That scrappy feel of where you feel like, I made this with my bare hands. You know, I'm going to see it through till the end. Wherever the end may be, who's to say, but I'm going to see it to that point.
Totally.
You can feel that.
Yes. And I think, too, you know, I always consider myself a performer first, even though I like and enjoy and am gratified by so many other things. But, like, Shira will tell you, even if I'm just an actor in a play, I'm, like, always that actor who's like, what if it's the future? And they're in an under, you know. And I've been blessed to work with a director who, like, responds to that and has that same collaborative energy and is not like, learn your lines and sit down. Mm-hmm. So, too, I've always had this energy, even when I'm just being an actor, of, like, I like to think big and like to imagine and I like to do all this other thinking. It's exciting to me and it helps me as a performer. And I think that just kind of energy that I have paired with in school, there was no theater major. There is now at Harvard, but there was not when I was there. Oh. So if you wanted to be involved in theater, there was it's all student run, student directed. And so I first remember going into there, I didn't like that. I was like, I want to be in a conservatory and getting this training. And that's also great.
Yeah.
But in retrospect, I'm so lucky to have had that experience, to be in this environment of like, we're all going to make it ourselves. We're all going to do it on our own. We're all going to figure it out together. Energy. So like, my experience, or a huge part of my experience of theater in college, where I made my own major and was studying theater and contemporary art, was this practice of scrappy, do it yourself. Everyone does everything. You show up at 9 a.m. to load in. They teach you how to hang a light, and you hang lights, and then mm-hmm. you tech it. And so I, through that, I've kind of been, it's been a little bred into me, this energy of like, make yourself, do it yourself. And in many ways, I'm so blessed to have had what is now 4 years of training of making things on your own.
Yeah.
And by yourself. Yeah. And having ideas and saying, cool, I'm with these, I have steps to do this show that I want to do.
Right.
I think for me, it's about the content. Like, the content always drives everything.
Yes.
So, like, where I wasn't interested in starting a company was I saw a lot of my peers. It's a way to blast off your career as a director, right? You like start a company and you find a play mm-hmm. and you rent a theater. And to me, I was like, oh, I'd go to that play and it's like a mini Playwrights Horizons or a mini Manhattan Theater Club. And I also, when I first moved to New York, it was the decade of the 2000s where like playwriting and directing both, I think, were not as adventurous and as exciting as they are now. That's commercial and not-for-profit. I think mm-hmm. things are explosively more adventurous now in a lot of ways.
Commercially especially. Yes.
And I see the nonprofits starting to catch up.
Yeah.
You know, like A Strange Loop is at Playwrights Horizons. Like, crazy things are happening. That was not happening in 2005. Yeah. Sorry. So, like, I saw some of my peers sort of, and I was like, okay, well, I don't feel the amount of work it takes to, like, have a board, raise money, get a grant, show up for your own load-in, blah, blah, blah. I was like, if I'm going to do all that, I don't want to do a mini Manhattan Theater Club project.
Mm-hmm.
So then it was like, well, then what? And then I didn't want to invest the kind of energy into that until I knew I needed a motivation beyond just, I like directing, which I do like I love it, like with all the cells inside my body, like right. I would give my arm to keep doing it. And yet I was like, I'm not going to start a, it wasn't enough for me. It didn't motivate me enough, which is why I was like, okay, I'll assist. I'll get a job at a regional theater. Like, I'll get a fellowship at Williamstown. I was doing all these very conventional and super helpful and good training experiences to kind of climb some kind of ladder. Not that there is a ladder. And turned out the ladder didn't go anywhere. Then I had to go to another ladder. It was like, that's our career.
Yeah.
And then when Mark came back from Berlin and was like, let's do Little Murders in an Abandoned Space. And when we had done it in a theater, we had built a set to make it look like we had taken over an abandoned space.
Got it.
So the idea was like, let's do it in an actually abandoned space. And I was like, well, that is something I could put my energy behind.
Mm-hmm.
And we found this website that's like Airbnb for empty storefronts. I don't even know if it still exists.
No.
Who knows?
Yeah. And so we like rented this empty burger restaurant and literally like furniture off the street. I mean, everything was, and the challenges come that you aren't expecting and you weather those. And then kind of, again, my organicity argument, like literally was sweeping the floor of the burger shop after we had struck the set. And Andrew was like, I've written 5 musicals, want to hear them. And then we didn't know what our next show was until the story I told you the other night. Like, we threw this party concert at $3 Bill, which was completely also fortuitous. Like, we were supposed to do it at Law 45. They canceled us at the last minute. Mark had heard of $3 Bill just by being a cool person in Bushwick, right? Had you even been there?
I'd never been there. I literally had, like, seen something on Instagram. And I live in the neighborhood, so I was like, okay.
Yeah.
And so I messaged them on Facebook. I called. No one answered. It's a bar.
Yeah.
I messaged. I wrote. It said, like, message this business. So I wrote. Who's ever does that? They wrote back. That I was like, I have a concert in 3 days and nowhere to do it. I have 200 people coming. Do you need customers? They were like, come by at 5 o'clock. We'll talk about it. I got on the L train. I went to see them. I met with a guy who doesn't work there anymore. He was like, yeah, no problem. So we do the concert in the front part of the bar. And honestly, during the sound check, Mark taps me on the shoulder and he's like, there's a door over here where you thought there wasn't a door because the door is bricks. So you think the doors are a wall. And he pushes open the door and we go around this corner and we walk into the like description of a club that we had been saying back and forth to each other. Like, if only there were a club that had X, Y, Z, A, B, C, and was X size. And there it was. And he looked at me and he said, Oscar at the Crown. And Oscar was on our list of things to do, but it wasn't like, the first thing we'll do is Oscar. And that night, I think, we started talking to the people who work at $3 Bill, like, hey, could we do a show here in January? Or certainly within a couple weeks.
Yeah. I mean, we definitely were talking about it that night. And then, I think like a week or two later,
I was away again.
Yeah, I had like had a meeting with Brenda, which I remember like very, very well prepared for. I was very nervous over. And I just kind of sat down and she was like, sounds good. Great. I was like, I remember leaving 5 minutes later and being like, she just said yes. But really.
And there's more on that, but like just back to my topic sentence of like content. Mm. So like we did Little Murders because it was like, this belongs in an empty space.
Yeah.
And then suddenly I didn't set out to say like, I want to do a musical in a nightclub. Let's find a club. It was like he had written this show and then there was this space and they were so obviously a match.
Yeah.
And that's how I feel also about the organicity of the Neon Coven. It's like and that's part of why I think I can get on board when I spent all these years just being my freelance independent self.
Yeah.
But now there's like, the content is leading the decision making.
Right.
And it makes sense. The way the three of us work together makes sense. And so now the content is continuing that partnership. It's not just a company to have a company or so that my friends will respond to the email. Like, there is an inner working that's starting to almost like manifest itself.
Yes.
I'd say the dream expansion of that, and this is reminding me that there's an email I have not sent yet to the cast of Oscar and to a bunch of other people, which is like our next step that we're dreaming of is we're like, here are the ways we are figuring out the way Mark and Shira and Andrew's skills fit together like a puzzle and drive the dream forward. Mm-hmm. And what we want to do now is turn out to you guys, you'll get an email, of like all the people who perform with us who we know have all these other skills.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're thinking about getting an office, we're like, as we're figuring out what the next steps are of the company, we're like, how can we keep these other people included and say, what part-time work would you like to do for us? And employ people. Because another thing that I've always shied away from in company building is I didn't want to just have like people who were our company members but weren't really getting compensation but liked it for the mission and like, God bless them. Right now, the only people who just like work forever for no pay is the three of us. And I want to minimize that as much as possible. I don't know how to make this a functioning business, but I want to make this something that we can actually, it's not going to pay our rent.
Right.
But
yet.
Yet. Yet. A seed does not feed a family.
Yeah. But I want to turn that, we just had this idea last week, but we were like, let's reach out to everybody and be like, who's good at bookkeeping? Who's good at, you know, bring Looney in for social media, like all these different skills. And I think, again, that for me, that's like the content is driving the logistics.
Yeah.
It's because we know what we want to make next and we know what kind of support we need. And now we're reaching out to people to help us.
Yes. Also, I love what you said regarding having experience, and you use those years of, there's this thing that we talk about on the podcast of like, quote unquote, waiting. Waiting is never waiting. Like, pauses are never pauses. Everything, you are always active. You are always engaged. So even when you're not doing exactly what you want to be doing, you're working on other skills, other opportunities, other experiences in order to gain knowledge and wisdom for the empire that you were trying to build. And so you were taking those years of directing, assistant directing, and working on all of these other projects in order to now have this company, you know, that you are spearheading and are able to organically produce things that didn't just come out of nowhere. You know, they've been carefully curated and meticulously cared for over the years, both with particular attention paid on them, but also attention that is paid towards these other things where you got to make mistakes and learn things and, you know, now take that knowledge and infect this idea that you have had all along with. You know, the same thing goes for working at Harvard, and we're going to talk about Oscar in a minute and, like, fully just break down that because that's one of my favorite stories. But, like, it's the same thing, you know, goes with that of, like, taking these years and other experiences. You know, you didn't even go to school for theater. What did you go to school for?
So I made my own major in, like, theater and contemporary art and performance studies.
Right.
But, you know, when I was in high school, I, like, auditioned for all the musical theater programs, and, like, that was what I was going to do, and I was going to go be an actor, and I was going to get my BFA. And then I kind of applied to Harvard being like, we'll see if I get in. And I got in. And it actually, like, as an 18-year-old, was this, like, enormous existential crisis. My mother will tell you I was, like, sobbing for days. Like, it threw me for this loop because...
Because it sucks to get into Harvard.
It's unfortunate.
Yeah, so it's hard.
It's unfortunate to be the 1%.
I know. It's like 6.5%. no, but for me, it actually was this thing. Yeah. And something that I was just talking about this in therapy this week. Something that is always really a challenge for me is, like, if I have a plan, I am committed to that plan, whether it is, like, the plan for my life and my dreams and goals, or it's, like, tomorrow I'm going to wake up at 10, and I'm going to go get a bagel, and then I'm going to do this.
You stick to it.
I stick to it, or I want to stick to it.
Yeah.
But if something, like, throws a wrench in that plan, I fall apart. Like, if I wake up at 10 and then the bagel place is closed, I'm done. I'm done for the day. And so it really, in big moments and in small moments. And so, like, at that moment, I was like, no, like, to what I want to do, my dreams, it's this. I can't do this other thing. Hindsight is 2020, right? Of course, yeah. In retrospect... I remember at the time, I was like, I'll go to Harvard for a year, and then I'm transferring to a conservatory. I'm just going to go and check it out, and then I'm going to be like, this isn't what I want. Because I know it's not for me. I know it's not what I want.
Go check out Harvard.
So I know. Whatever. It's the reality.
No,
it's my life.
No, I mean, it came out of your mouth. I'm just rephrasing it.
So it was this moment of, like, I thought this is what I had to do. I can't go do this other thing. And now I'm so grateful that I did, because it forced me to develop all these skills other than just... being a performer. And if I even think about, like, when I was a sophomore, I, like, really wanted to get involved with the ART, the American Repertory Theater, where Shira was working. And I remember I saw them, like, do a posting for, like, an internship in the marketing department for Pippin. And I was like, ooh, I want to get in on Pippin. I have no interest in marketing. It's not what I want to do. I don't care, but sure, whatever.
Yes.
And then I worked in that department for, like, 6 or 7 years through school and after. And thank God I did, because I've developed these other skills.
Yes.
So it's really, for me, this kind of journey to where we are now has been this, like, every time I've been like, I have to do this, but I'm going to do this other thing. Like,
yeah.
It has forced me to, like, develop in these other ways.
Well, that's so interesting, because I don't want to harp on it too much, because you both, like, broken down wearing many hats, you know? But, like, every experience, every new experience that you have, every time that you decide to step out of your comfort zone and go try this thing that is still related to your interests, it's still related to what you want to be doing, it is part of the empire that you want to be building, but it's just looking at it from a different perspective, getting a couple of other different skills that you can hone that are outside of, like, the performative skill or the directing skill or the artistic skills, honestly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, having those other experiences, every time that you decide to add another layer to what you can offer to other people, you are redefining your identity as an artist, as a self-starter, as an entrepreneur, as a business, whatever. You know, and so it's interesting seeing now the way that the coven works, seeing the way that you three work together and, like, ebb and flow with each other. You can see the different skills that you have all acquired along the way. You can see your strengths and weaknesses and how they layer into each other. And that is hashtag goals, because if you are starting a company with people, working with people, first of all, collaborations, am I right? Like, what a bitch. Like, it's just, you know that there's going to be conflict. There will always be conflict. But that's the point, right? If you're just collaborating with yourself, that's a total, like, Jekyll and Hyde situation. Like, you have to be able to see all of the angles yourself. Whereas when you're working with other people, you automatically have this peanut gallery of people with other skills and other perspectives who can see your work with both admiration and also reservations, you know, ways that it can be improved. And it's so wonderful. And I feel like the golden ticket is when you find those people who can do that with both respect for your work and also respect for your potential and the potential that you have as a collective. And so it's fun to feel that as someone who gets to participate within the coven, you know, and work under that just magnanimous sort of leadership. And so let's talk about finding people to join the coven and kind of adding people into the fold. Everybody that I've talked to, both in Oscar and also just people who come for the different concerts and participate in all of the different events, everybody has a different story. Let's pick one person. Let's pick one person and talk about how they came into the coven. What's a good story?
I'm thinking. I was just going to say the same, yeah. So Michelle Martinelli, who's brilliant, we can go on and on. Absolutely. And I met when she was at college at Emerson, so she knew Andrew from college. And then Andrew and I knew each other because we were both performing in the Donkey Show at ART. And then Michelle ended up joining that company as well. So, like, Michelle and I were, like, college friends, but we didn't technically go to school together.
Right.
And we were performing together. And she's just insanely brilliant. And she's... It's been interesting because I think as we've grown the coven, it depends on projects, right? Because, again, what you were saying, like, content drives everything, or the material drives everything. So we would maybe be doing something and be like, we're just going to reach out to all of our talented friends and get them. And then sometimes we'll do something and we'll hold auditions. And so there's been this kind of, these two generators going at the same time. One of which being, like, who do we already know and love working with and it is disgustingly talented? And then, like, this other one that has enabled us to, like, meet people that we would not have known or met otherwise. And so there's been a lot of people who have come in through that, like, I knew Michelle Martinelli, and so did Andrew, and I think you kind of did too, or...
Well, can I talk about Little Murders?
Oh my god!
Yeah.
Michelle Martinelli was Little
Murders. So what happens in Little Murders is there are seven, I think, or six, it doesn't matter, main roles, and then there's this, it's a really weirdly structured play where in the middle of the play there's a wedding, and there are all these wedding guests that are supposed to show up, and they have lines, and then they don't appear again.
Love
so
that.
Since our take was set far in the future in a post-apocalyptic version of America, see a theme, where and they'd, like, the family had taken over this empty restaurant and was pretending it was a perfect 1960s sitcom-y home. We decided the wedding guests were literally just people off the streets who didn't even know the bride and groom, but, like, there's no social life, there's no actual, like, network or society. You just, the like, father and mother of the groom went out into the street and was like, you want to, there's food. And, like, people, so, like, weirdos came.
Yeah.
Basically, and we were like, who can we ask? It's one thing to ask your friends to, like, play a part in this crazy show in an empty restaurant in Brooklyn in the dead of August with no AC. It's another thing to find, like, three or four people who will come and, like... Oh, I skip a major point, which is that they have a few lines, then they have a gigantic, maybe, like, 9 or 10 minute fight scene, which Andrew choreographed.
In which they all die.
Oh, which they all die. So it's like, hey, will you come to this thing? I think it's like 4 or 5 rehearsals. I'm not really sure. Rehearsing at Columbia, so you gotta ride the train forever. And then we're gonna tech in this empty restaurant. And also during the first act of the play, I don't want the audience to see you, so you've gotta wait in the basement of this restaurant. You can wait in my apartment, which is down the street, but then I don't know if you'll make your curtain on time. So it was a special crew of people who said, yes, I am down for that adventure.
Love that.
And one of them was Michelle Martinelli. And that is literally how I met her. And then, and also Andrew ended up doing their faces. So they just had crazy people makeup. They showed up. They ate Nilla wafers. They had a few lines. I just thought of Oscar. Yeah, a couple lines. They have a giant fight scene. They died. And then they left. And then we did act three.
Yeah, like they would go out to the bar. And just, like, we'd meet them after.
We'd meet them at the bar.
Wow.
So when she came and auditioned for this version of Oscar, it wasn't just that she blew me away in the audition with her singing, dancing, acting. It was also like, this is Neon Coven people. Like, I knew that, you know, Salt of the Earth, like, shows up, is game, has a great time, wants the weirdness. Mm-hmm. You've got to, like, want the weird. Because the weird is coming.
You need to put that on the cast breakdown. Any cast breakdown for a Neon Coven show.
You got to want the weird.
Literally what you just said.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, the type of people that would fit within this collective.
And I think, too, because part of it for me, or an important part of it for me, is, like, to have and build an artistic family.
Mm.
And have it always growing, and as you were saying before, continuing to, like, feed back in and support itself and support each other.
Yes.
And so the thrill has been making family of the people I already were family with, and then bring all these new people in. It does come down to that common denominator of people who are down to clown and, like, down to work and, like, be a part of things in ways beyond maybe the scope of what they normally would do on a show where they're being an actor, if they want to.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And so that's been fun.
What's so beautiful about the Neon Coven specifically is that, and it's a conversation that I've had with several of the people in Oscar, is that I can't think of a show or, like, an example or another situation where I would find myself in the same holding audition room as everybody in the show. You know, there are some shows, like, I could pick people off the street and put them in a holding room and put Hello Dolly on the wall, and, like, everybody would... That would make sense. You know, I would know exactly who would belong in that room. And it, you know, the list goes on and on of different examples. But, like, this is a collective of people who all have different skills, very unique things. We do this show at night, and then the next day we go about our lives, and we go about so many different lives, so many different schedules. Just in planning our, like, in trying to collaborate our schedules together,
yeah.
You see that our lives are so different, our interests are so different, our niches are so different. But to be able to come together and talk about being different and unique and fabulous, you know, and exploring that with each other, and also shedding a light on, you know, queerness and otherness, it's cool. I feel cool. I feel cool. I feel cool. This is the coolest I've ever felt, I think.
I mean, you're very
cool. Very cool. That's
saying,
so that's really saying something.
Thank you, but I feel really cool being a part of the Neon Coven. And, okay, I want to roll into, because I want to start talking about Oscar, but before that, I think a great transition question would be to bring up the question that, Mark, you asked Shira last week. We did a press event, and... Andrew and Shira and Mark decided to ask each other a few spur-of-the-moment questions for the people who were answering the questions. They were spur-of-the-moment. But you asked a fantastic question, which Shira is now famous for answering.
It was an incredible answer.
It was an incredible answer.
You're building it up.
On the spot.
My question from the other night really surrounded reference. And I think that it's interesting to me how so much queer art revolves around reference. If you even think about, like, gay Twitter to the writings of Oscar Wilde, which were filled with allusion and to the Greeks and to the Bible and, you know, all of that. And so my question of the day was, like, why do you think that is? What is it about queer art and queer culture that is so absorbent and dependent on and living in the revelry of reference? Even something like Rocky Horror, right? If you watch that film, it is like every painting in the background is a reference to something else. And mm-hmm. Shira answered
the lyrics of science fiction are fully
a list of references.
A list of references.
Yes.
Yeah. Tell us your answer, because I loved it.
Yeah, so I mean, my response is that my hunch is that it has to do with, first of all, with performance and identity. So that when you make a reference, you are putting yourself into relationship to that thing that you're referencing. In a way, you're like making a space for yourself and adding yourself to the catalog of things and events. In particular, I think the reason why that becomes a common tool in the creation of queer culture is because there is a particular gap between who you may be on the deep, deep inside and who you're allowed to be on the outside, which actually all people experience all day long, every day. But of course, for obvious reasons, as a queer person, you're under so much more extreme pressure of that gap. So that I think so much of queer culture and queer performance is about the investigation of that gap between the interior life and the exterior presentation. And that in exploring that gap, in trying to figure out what that is, or hide what it is, or take the mask off and then put it back on and then reveal again, that referencing is like is one of the major tools in that masking and unmasking experience, because it situates you, it aligns you with something, and I think most importantly it gives you, I want to use the word legitimacy, but it's also, it gives you illegitimacy, right? Like, I'm going to align myself with this rebel to prove that I am. So it kind of puts you, instead of saying, like, as a queer person, I'm off the grid, I'm unimportant, I don't count, it's a way of saying, look, here are my claws inside this thing. Mm-hmm. It's a way of saying, I count, I'm part of this culture. And I do think it comes back to the wrestling with that space between who you are and who you're allowed to be.
Mm, I love that.
I love it.
It's Thank so you. Good. It's so good. And it, but it resonates not just with queer people. It resonates with people who are looking to be allies, or also who are just looking to understand the queer community. I love how pop culture is used in that. I love how it also relates to Oscar, because of how much pop culture is infused into this underground society that doesn't have access, no longer has access to that pop culture. And how it relates both to those people in there, but also our audience relates to it as well, because they're finding their own identity, I think, within our show, which is fun to watch.
And it's interesting too, because I think, you know, growing up as a queer person, again, this is not speaking to everyone's experience, but to mine, I was, like, born into a culture that I didn't know I was born into, and that, like, my immediate family was not a part of. Mm. Like, right? There's no other queer people in my immediate family. Aunts, uncles, cousins, sure. But, so I had this culture, or this part of my identity that I didn't have an immediate other frame of reference for. So that's why I think I grew up looking to pop culture. You look for the other things. And that's why I think, you know, if you think about, like, Judy Garland or Madonna or Lady Gaga, like, I think why queer people grab onto these iconic figures, whether people or whatever it may be, it is this idea of, like, oh, there's this culture that I have that is mine, but it's not right around me, so I have to go find it and seek it out and annex it and make it my own.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is at a big core of Oscar at the Crown.
Yeah.
It is this annexing of pop culture to create identity, or to create a way of understanding, or to create a way of living or being, or to create a truth that works and aligns with what you want and the way you wish the world was.
Yeah, yeah. Let's talk about Oscar. Let's talk about it. From the roots, from the seeds, it started as your senior thesis?
Yes. I had done, like, my junior year, I did this show that was this, like, weird abstract performance art thing that was, like, kind of about the Real Housewives and this character from The O.C., the TV show The O.C., see Julie Cooper. And it was this, like, kooky, weird thing, and I was interested in all, in celebrity and persona and performance and pop culture and all of that. And while I was making that, I was taking this class on Oscar Wilde. And I was like, oh, he did. He knew what he was doing. He knew about all this. He was playing in this world in a time when so few people were, so few people had the access to play in that world. And I was like, oh, yeah, great. Like, this seems like a total fit. So then I made this show for my senior thesis, which was this kind of pop culture pop club musical about, like, the life and rise and fall of Oscar Wilde. And Shira was a part of both of those shows. And because we were friends at the time, like, always engaged with him, talking with me about them and exploring those ideas. Then I went away for a while, and then we came back, and I was like, oh, I think I'm still interested in this show. Or I might be, and I'm not sure. I think I was like, I might be, and I'm not sure. Let's dive into it again, and I might decide there's more to chew on here, or I might decide, okay, bye, move on. And we did this, like, one night only workshop of a version of the show at this bar in Bushwick, not where we do it now, but at another one. And Shira came to see it. Want to tell that part of the story?
Yeah, I mean, this part's really fun and kind of lovely, which is that I went, I remember exactly when it was, because it was the Saturday night before Christmas, and it was the dead of winter, and I had been invited to 4 Christmas parties. And I really wanted to go. I had just moved back to New York. I'd been back maybe a year, but I was like, I want to see all these different people. It's Christmas time. But my friends are doing a workshop. And this is like hashtag theater person life. Mm-hmm. You have those nights where you're like, I gotta go to my friend's show.
Gotta go support.
I gotta go to my friend's show. And the parties went late. I went to the parties after. But before that, I like go out to Bushwick. I get to Law 45. And I usually skip this part. But at the beginning, I was like, this crowd is cool. Like, I go to a lot of shows.
Yeah.
And I was like, everybody here is way younger than me, which is what I want. They are on, like, I don't know where they fall in the gender spectrum. It's like, we've got the whole range here. Anyone could be anybody. They're not all white people, which is radical. Now I know it was just like a regular Saturday night in Bushwick, but I'd maybe never been there. And I was like, okay, I'm glad I came. You know, I like was talking to the one person I knew there. And then the show began. Amethyst was still the first song.
Yep.
And I remember Grace doing the choreography. And I was like, this is crazy fierce. Like, from the beginning, it was the first I'd seen of Andrew's choreography. And I'd heard the songs before, and I just, in the first version, it was like, were there also other pop songs?
It was, no, there were not.
Oh.
We did that, like, ballad version of Bewitched, Bothered, and Bewildered randomly in the middle of the show.
So I guess it was, you know, I had heard but there were like three music songs. A few years before, but for whatever reason, time and place, I was like, these are incredible pop hits, and this choreography is off the charts. And I don't totally know what's going on, but I fully love the show and everyone who's in it. And I just had a great night. Do you want to tell the rest?
And it was at that time of that kind of workshop where I was like, I think this Housewives thing and this Oscar Wilde thing, like, might be the same thing. The intention always was, like, they were always exploring the same ideas, because they're the ideas that I'm, and always have been interested in artistically and intellectually.
Which is?
Persona, celebrity, worship of icons, self-creation of a persona, you know, all of that stuff. And so I was like, I'm just going to throw the Real Housewives thing into this Oscar Wilde thing. See what happens. See if it's fun. And so we did that. We did it. And I remember talking to Shira after. And she was like, I want to help you. What do you need? And I was like, I need someone to, like, help me make this a thing. I need someone to, like, develop these ideas into something that's actually a show that makes sense, but not too much sense. Just enough sense. And I was like, I need a director. But not even a director, but I need, like, a strong co-collaborator. And the way I have always generated and worked It's very hard for me to, like, go home and sit down at a laptop and type a play. I need to, like, have, like, do research and put things all over the place and then, like, tell Shira my six different ideas that I think. And then, ultimately, you know, we get six more and then we find a new one that's the real one. So, like, I knew that I needed a director and someone, but someone really to, like, get into the weeds of this thing with me. And someone who has the skills to, like, take all my ideas and my images and my abstract thoughts and be like, I think this might be our structure. So then we began what was like 8 or so months maybe of like trying to take all these ideas that were in the show and trying to make it into something that felt like a show, but certainly was not like a traditional book musical. Hmm. Although if you read the script, it feels like one. Surprisingly enough.
I mean, it's true what you said earlier, Bessie, of like, all those years that I spent working on different things, like, things do make sense and you don't know why they're going to. So mm-hmm. the show that Mark and I did when he was an undergraduate was that I cast him in, is a Taylor Mack play. And it's a 5-hour Taylor Mack play that I was in charge of directing. And a lot of the skill in that was creating, you know, making sure the audience feels there's order as they journey through this chaos. And a lot of my work, because I have a very linear brain and I have a really... kind of like eccentric taste, that the combination is like, I make order out of chaos. That's my journey. And so it did feel like, oh yeah, it wasn't like I saw Oscar and I was like, I need to direct this. It wasn't like I need a project and Mark is a young artist and that's gonna be my ticket to get. It was like, I saw it. I was like, I love it. Can I help? Do you need a dramaturg? Do you need me to raise money? And Mark was like, I would love for you to direct it. I was like, I love directing.
I love to do that.
That's like the thing I do the best and love
She's
most.
She's very good at it.
You're going to do that? Do that
thing? I was like, please.
It was a dream. I've been waiting for people to ask me to direct things my whole life. So, and it did feel like, oh yeah, I also want to direct it. But it's so different from other meetings where I've had, where I've been like, hi, I'm here to tell you why I should direct this show. And people are like, we'll call you. Mm. And this was just, again, that's the organicity of this. Mm-hmm. I was not nervously showing up to this coffee being like, maybe they'll let me be the director. It just made sense.
Yeah.
And when we were in, Andrew and I had never really worked together, but we were in the room together and it was like, we learned.
Yeah.
And our collaboration also made sense. I think something I've been saying a lot recently about the three of us is Andrew is a chaos Muppet. Mark and I are both order Muppets, but in different ways. So, like, that is part of why the triumvirate makes, like, functions.
Yeah.
And also, of course, there are bumps in that. But because it's not just a two-way partnership, we can kind of, as we hit bumps, different people kind of carry the load over the bump.
Mm-hmm. It's important to have that, I mean, that balance between, especially between three people, you know. And so, okay, so you finished the workshop. You've been, now the show has been running... Well, there was the limited engagement in the winter. And now we officially opened June 2nd. Hmm?
May 30th.
I don't remember.
Yeah. May 30th. I don't remember. It was all a blur. We officially opened on May 30th. And now Oscar the Crown is in an open run at $3 Bill in Bushwick. Take the ale.
L for love.
L for love. L for litty. How do you describe the show to friends? To people who are like, so what's the show about? Because I have my version. I want to hear both of yours.
I always say it's an immersive nightclub pop musical about Oscar Wilde and the Real Housewives. And I don't say that much more.
Okay. What do you say?
Exactly that.
Okay.
And I find... It was something we've talked about a lot when we were doing the first run of it in January, so really starting to put out into the world. I got so many, a few times, people said to me, like, the more I learn about this show, the less I think I understand what it's about and what it is, and the more I know I need to see it. And so my thing is always, I'm like, I promise, it makes sense. It works. And people are curious.
My subheading is, it's really fun, you're going to love it, you should come.
Yeah.
And I've directed some things that, like, that I love and believe in, but I wouldn't say that. You know, I did a show about the fallout from the coup in Chile. And I wouldn't say, like, it's really fun, you're going to love it, you should come. I'm like, oh, it's based on this novel, you may like it, it's very stimulating, mm-hmm. I think it's very important, da, 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 da. But this show, with all confidence, I can say, it's really fun, you're going to love it, you should come.
Yeah, and that is usually, that is definitely, I always follow up with that. I always follow up with, you are going to love it, you are not ready, you need to come see this show. And it's not just because once again, it's, yes, because of the content. Not because of the importance of the content necessarily, or like how impactful it will be on your life necessarily. Because I don't think it's necessarily about that. It's a joyous, cathartic experience within slightly stressful and panicking circumstances.
There's and acting so and dancing and everything else.
Yeah. There's a lot of people working very, very hard on this show. Definitely worth the watch. I feel like I just listened to the story of my parents telling me how I was conceived.
And then Bessie came home from Thailand. You know, people do often ask about the casting of the show. And, mm-hmm. and what I always tell them was like, we wanted people who are insanely talented in specific things, whether it's like a really specific style of dance or way of singing, and they have to be like game and down. Mm-hmm. That's it.
Would you mind telling the story of Zofia's audition? I do think it should be included on this episode.
Yes! So Zofia Vareka, who plays Vicky in the show, she came in and she had size and she sang and like just blew the roof off the room with her
singing's incredible.
Insane voice. She had a super cool outfit on, which she always does. Mm-hmm. And then you noticed something on her resume.
Did I notice that?
It wasn't me. I think it was you.
Well, so a couple things. One, I was like, I'll be honest, when she came in, it was a day of a lot of white women. And I was like, three white creators. Like, the diversity in this casting is really important. And I was sort of paying less attention. As the day went on, I was like, another white woman came in and I'd be like, uh-huh. Not ever next. I'm always right. present in auditions. But there was a little bit for me of like, there's no way I can cast all of them. It doesn't matter how good they are. And it's like, that feeling sucks. Because you know you're taking someone's job away for not the right reason, but yet the right reason. And I was definitely at that fatigue level. She was amazing and she caught my attention. But I was like, this is going to be hard. And then on her special skills section, she had written, does a Bernadette Peters impression. So we were like, can we hear it? And she was like, really?
She said she had never been asked
before. No one had asked her. Now I know she was 2 minutes out of college, so that's not so radical. But yeah. I was like, yeah, can you sing us a little something? Andrew was game.
Yeah, for sure.
And she started to sing Not a Day Goes By. Mm-hmm. And she sang the entire thing. So she started, and we were already laughing because her face changes. Yeah. It's like Bernadette Peters emerges out of Zofia's body and stands there in front of you. And she starts singing, and we're laughing. And then it was like, verse, chorus, verse. I was like, she's gonna keep going.
And it, but it was all I really feel like it was all of us, including her. Like, she'd get to a stopping point, and we would all just I wasn't going to stop her, and I was like, assure Andrew, and be like, oh my god, that rocks. But like, none of us were. And I feel like she also is probably like, I'm going to keep going. And also, that says something about her, right? To not like do it. She'd be like, cool, thanks. She was like, all right, I'm just going to keep doing it. And she did the entire song. And we were like, we were behind. We were running late, of course.
Always.
But it was like, yeah. I was like, you get it.
Yeah.
Not only is like the impression good, but like, yeah, just do the whole song.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it was, it's that long of a song.
It's, I mean, her impression is,
it's good.
It's good.
It's good. And look, at the end of the day, when you lay out all the headshots on the floor and you're like, who do you like? Who goes where? Casting for the show was a particular challenge because there were so many possible combinations. And we saw a lot of great people. There was probably like a whole shadow cast that could have been in the show that just, they didn't fit with the people who, and you're like looking at all these headshots and it's like, which one's that one? Oh, she's saying this. And it's like Bernadette Peters impression. You're like, oh yeah, okay, put her, I remember.
Yeah.
So it's tactically very savvy.
I love that. I also love that y'all didn't snooze on those special skills, because honestly, that's one of the first places that I look. I want to see, it's one of the only places that you truly see on that resume somebody's personality, I think. And I just started kind of realizing that and starting to curate my own towards that. My last special skill used to be fertile. I've now taken that off because I got a weird comment once.
I love that though.
Yes. Yeah. But so now it's Master Gleeker and nobody's asked me to do it yet.
I would so definitely ask you.
I'm glad that you pay attention to it. Yeah. I'm glad. I mean, creative teams don't snooze on those special skill sections. They're important. I want to end just with one last quick question because the theme this season is manifestations. So just like one or two aspirations, hopes, dreams, or something that you feel comfortable sharing right now about what you're manifesting as the Neon Coven.
Something I keep kind of bringing up when I think about the experience of having done Oscar is I'm like, I conned all these people into this. There was a moment when I was like, Andrew, I have this weird thing about the Real Housewives and the OC. I think it's a song. And then he wrote like this 9-minute production number that's this incredible song. So I keep having these experiences of like, how did I convince all these people to do this crazy thing? And I want to manifest more of that. And I want to manifest more of that for us as a group. I want to manifest us having an idea, whether it's for a show or a part of a show or an event or a mission, any big or small, normal or kooky. And I just want to do it. Because it's hard to like have an idea and then do it. Or at least it's hard for me. Yeah, I just want us to keep like doing what we want to do and what makes us happy and doing it with people that we love and respect. That's all.
Cheer up.
Actually, my truest, honest answer is I want to manifest that Mark writes more plays because I know that he identifies as an actor and is primarily an actor, and Oscar was always kind of like, and then you wrote this thing, so we'll do it. But, like, it's really well written.
Mm-hmm.
And we've started talking about his next ideas. And I do know the difference between an actor who wrote a thing, and then we do it, and he's in it. And, like, oh, what's inside that head of yours? And I have the second feeling about Mark, and that is what I want to manifest.
Thank you. Yeah. And I'm very grateful to have someone who takes that chaos in my brain and helps me to create order with it. Because I couldn't do it on my own. At all.
Taurus, Virgo, rising. I don't know what to tell you. You need your land signs, my friends. You're so welcome.
True. So true. Thank you for keeping us grounded.
Yes,
keep us grounded. But we're present.
We're present.
Yes. I love that. This definitely means we're going to have to get all three of you in here in the same room in the future and just talk about, I don't know, whatever's next. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Mwah.
Great.